not of Chu is living in a city today, and while population is supposed to decrease from the years 2020, 2030 onwards, the issue has never been about the actual quantity, it has rather been about the density. Now, with density increasing, the problems are increasing, and clearly increasing problems, big problems require big decisions. Big decisions can clearly be done by big companies. So I think it's no surprise that we're going to see the reemergence of big players, service providers, integrators of integrators, and an example of which is IBM. My company worked with IBM, so let me just illustrate on that. We will be hearing about this later on a little bit more details. So they shared the vision that this planet can only become smarter, really smarter, if we instrument the world, we interconnect the world, and we put some intelligence on top. Now, which technology allows you to do that? And this is really machine to machine. So machine to machine essentially means what the name suggests, you're connecting a huge amount of machines with another amount of machines through a network. Now, the network might be anything. We'll talk about this in a while. The technologies we have really at hand today is a plethora of different technologies, really. And whilst we are mainly, you know, the Internet of Things community, and we like to be the wireless community, let me assure you that 40% of the M2M market today is wired. And that is a percentage which is not going to decrease over time, because that community is not sleeping either. So where does that huge market share come from, really? It comes from the fact that where you really want to measure things today, important things, you usually have a cable, you have some way of actually connecting physically your device to the internet. The other 60% today are occupied by technologies which are due to short-range communication. So it is Zigbee type of communication, wireless LAN, low-power wireless LAN, Bluetooth, NFC, we have heard it all. And another big chunk which is emerging lately, which is the cellular machine-to-machine. And this is really the domain where you presume that every single little object will have some form of a SIM card, really. I mean, we don't think that on the long run, every single one will have a physical SIM card you have to put in. But it will be a logical SIM card. A SIM card most likely which you will be able to reprogram over the air, so you can switch a huge amount of objects from one domain to another domain, from one service operator to another service operator. But the trend is there. And I want to talk specifically about the cellular machine-to-machine in the context of smart cities, because this is what we're doing from a research point of view as well, from a company point of view. Now, this going cellular over the near-field communication using Zigbee type of systems or even NFC type of systems has a few advantages. I think the first big advantage really is that it allows you to really communicate both ways. And I think that is a very important design paradigm really we need to bear in mind, because we have been designing the internet before. It's not the first time we're designing the internet. So this Internet of Things should follow the very same design principles we have been doing before. So one of the major design principles is that if I get information from point A to point B, I also get it from point B to point A. Now, NFC is not doing that, really. So NFC as such is a beautiful technology. It allows you to get information from point A to point B, but it finishes basically here. Due to its huge application space, we will have a large amount of actual objects connected via NFC. But what we want is, we want something like the internet where, due to simple protocols where a computer communicates with another computer and back, we want an explosion, we want an exponential growth, something which we cannot do if we have just simple NFC at hand. I think another big advantage of machine-to-machine, again, bearing in mind a cellular connectivity connecting both end of a machine, is it allows you to cover really large distances. And if you come from the research community and even the industrial community, we've been trying to do the undoable. We've been trying to provide services in a ubiquitous manner using near-field kind of communication systems like Zigbee, wireless LAN, etc. It's simply not possible. We are moving. Urban environment is about mobility. We are moving. So therefore, why not use a system which has been a community which has been doing this exercise for decades and use the expertise? So again, cellular M2M is a very natural development in that direction. I think another very important point is the ability to control interference. Now, a lot of people don't like the fact that the cellular operator, whoever is running the show, has actually the power to say who's transmitting to whom and when and where and over what. But it has a big advantage that we keep something at bay, which is the biggest problem in urban communication today, which is interference. So I can't communicate from my working room to my living room because my wireless LAN station is being interfered by about 18 other wireless LAN stations I have at home. So there's a problem. Barcelona has been rolled out with Wi-Fi, complete coverage. They've paid 45 million euros to enable smart city applications over Wi-Fi networks. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Too much interference. We have a problem here, and this is what the cellular community really allows you to do. It actually allows you to get your data transmitted from point A to point B and B to A in a controlled fashion, in a manner that you really can guarantee that Internet of Things traffic. I think another big advantage of the cellular machine-to-machine is that we realize that a lot of things we would like to measure, a lot of things we would like to make sense of, happens around us. It's happening around our universe, so to say, and the iPhone is actually proving this. So everything which is, the iPhone is a very sensory device, and you know, smartphones, etc., are clearly on the uptake. What is happening here, that the advantage of having a cellular interface is you're simply close to the crowd. You would like to measure something for the crowd, and you're close to the crowd, so just use it. You know, people call it crowdsourcing, whatever. But these are issues which I think we have to capitalize on much more to make some sense out of the city, to make it really smarter. Okay, so I've talked about this, and really from a challenge point of view, clearly we have a lot of challenges, and the guys next doors who talk really about machine to machine, they know about this much better. So we're talking about the ability to support a huge amount of nodes in a cellular network. So a cellular operator today traditionally supports some 200, 300 users per base station, has about 20,000 base stations per country on average. Now that is going to increase by orders of magnitude. How do you accommodate all these nodes? Then we figure out that a very important thing is the power efficiency of our devices. Now, NFC and all these devices you're familiar with, they consume very little power, but our mobile phones, we're recharging them once a day. I'm recharging my iPhone twice a day. Now, you can't do that with a million of nodes, really. So the idea is really to come up with a system, a technology, which allows you to operate in a power-efficient manner. How do you do that? You put them to sleep. And this is really what is coming big time. You put devices to sleep. It's called duty cycling. So you let them sleep 99.8% of the time, and 0.2% of the time they're awake and they're actually communicating. It doesn't mean that they have to wake up once a day. It can mean they wake up once a second, but it means they're sleeping almost all the time of the second, just waking up for 10 milliseconds, doing all the communication in 10 milliseconds, and then going back to sleep. The big question is, can cellular systems do that today? No, they cannot. So if you arrive, you step out of the airplane, you switch on your mobile phone, it takes sometimes a minute to get your phone actually connected. So this is because your mobile phone has fallen asleep, it's waking up, establishing connections, etc. It takes a long while. So therefore, all these challenges related to this type of technology, they're still ahead of us. But once we master them, I think we have a very powerful tool at hand because it's ubiquitous. It handles handovers, roaming, call admission control, interference. It is one hop. So we don't have these multi-hop problems, which is giving so many opportunities to the academic community to publish a lot of things, but in reality, it's a big headache. So you get really around these all these problems, and you come up with a commercially viable solution. And one of them is actually we're rolling out with World Sensing, where I'm CTO, working a lot with IBM, incidentally, a smart city solution. And we came up with this, with the idea, with the notion that if you really want to make a difference, It is good to concentrate on public transport. I fully second the talks we had heard before. But if you forget about the private transport, you just forget half of the story. It's actually suicidal to just work on the public transport infrastructure in a city, because we all know that we love our cars. It's very difficult to get people off their beloved cars. So therefore, we came up with a solution, an automated parking solution, just to give you one of the examples. We have more of them. So where we put sensors, essentially, machine-to-machine enabled sensors and parking places, they would give you real-time information to control center. That control center informs either panels in the street or your smartphone or your GPS, and would tell you, don't do rounds, don't look here, don't go left, don't go right, etc. So you actually find your parking place very quickly. Now, what is the impact? The impact is huge. And I'm speaking for Barcelona because I know Barcelona pretty well. So in Barcelona, there's about 1 million people every day looking on average for 15 minutes for parking. Okay, I think this is more or less the same happening in Budapest, what I have understood. So these are the type of numbers. If you just get this down by 5 minutes, just, you know, you tell people there's no parking here, and this is really what is happening, because downtown, peak hours, most likely you don't find parking, and for some reason, people still feel they're lucky, so they're doing these rounds for 15 minutes until they finally give up, or they strike lucky, whatever. So, but this technology allows you to say, don't do these rounds, go to a parking place, go to another area, et cetera, et cetera. If we just lower it by 5 minutes, the impact is higher than the bicing scheme we introduced in Barcelona. So we save more CO2 than due to the bicing, these smart green bicing schemes we introduced. So the impact is much higher because you really come to the core of the whole problem. So I call that really, from World Sensing's point of view, I call that the $0 trillion market, really. It's clearly a lot of potential here, and there's no surprise that IBM has put $10 billion into the whole thing with the hope really to make, ideally, maybe $100 billion on the long run. But it's a huge market. The only problem is we have seen loads of zeros so far. We've seen very, very billions. So there's very little cash flow in here, and I think this comes to the very fundamental problem, really, of the IoT, because the big question is, who's financing this? We had internet designs before. We have built highways. It's a form of an internet. It's just connecting city A with city B. Roosevelt, Hitler's time, etc. There has been a huge governmental upfront, really, unjustified at that time, totally unjustified. It has, however, created an industry which is working now. 1 out of 8 on this room, in average, is somehow related to the car industry. We have done this again. The internet, as we know today, had a huge governmental upfront, unjustified. Nobody knew how it is going. And maybe we have to do the same thing again. Maybe the governments have to put, again, a lot of money on the table just to do something which seems totally unjustified, just to get it rolling. Or alternatively, and this is how I see things moving now, you create this internet of important things. We don't talk about collecting temperature, who cares? We don't talk about collecting pollution, etc., heat, pressure, humidity, who cares? Nobody cares. What people really care about are these applications we've heard before. Those who carry value, where people really, where people, most likely companies, are willing to pay actually for the whole thing. So the parking application generates, not only does a lot of benefits to the cities themselves and the citizens, but it creates a lot of value there, and that's why it is creating a lot of interest in various cities all around the world. So I really think this should be our exercise, maybe this two-phased approach, you know, go maybe through the internet of important things, really concentrate on those items which generate value. Generating value means you have to have a network in place which works as robust as available, and machine-to-machine is really a good candidate for that. And then later on, go maybe to this Internet of Things as we all imagine it, where you connect any possible object to do any possible things and create this really exponentially growing number of applications. Thank you very much.